You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. This is In the Garden, show produced by UC Master Gardeners of Orange County. I'm Katrina Kirkapy, and I'm here today with my co-host Tina Spindler, and we're hosting In the Garden with Master Gardeners. Now, usually the first of the month, we usually do August and what to do in the garden, but I think we're going to call it something a little different today. Tina, what are we going to call our show today?
Well, it is what to do in the garden in August, but we're going to be talking about mostly taking a break because it's so darn hot in August, but doing a little maintenance and finally a lot of planning because it's just too hot in August to spend all day out in the garden.
Yes, there's other things to do in the summertime,
yes,
right?
It's time to take a vacation. Go to the beach.
Even from your garden.
Yeah.
Can you believe two gardeners are saying that?
Yeah.
But it's true.
It is true.
We love our gardens and we want to stay loving our gardens. And being out in the garden right now might not make us feel a lot loving right now.
That's true. And yet we don't want it to go completely to rack and ruin. And we also, since it is August, we know that summer is in its, you know, more or less its end times. We will have summer, you know, probably through September. But what we really need to start doing is some planning, and gardeners love to plan for the future. That's what's great about gardening is it's always so hopeful. There's always a new season.
There's always new things to do on the horizon.
Yeah, so any of those, you know, failures that we call learning experiences that you may have had in the past, this is the time when you can ponder those and think about cooler weather. And if you haven't ever had a cool season garden, it's time to get excited about maybe creating your first one.
Amen. That sounds so good.
Yeah. So first of all, truly, you know, don't feel bad about not getting out in your garden too often, but do use those early morning cool hours and maybe those evening cooler hours to just do what you need to do in order to keep your garden maintained so that you have still a pleasant environment, because we do want to spend as much time out in our garden, barbecuing, having friends over, and enjoying those summer days. So we'll talk a little bit about those tasks that you want to continue to do during August, and then we'll talk about how to get started planning your cool season garden, which will be around the corner.
And this is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. So, first of all, what do you need to do to keep this garden maintained? Well, of course, it's August. And as we talked in our last month's show in July, you got to beat the heat and you got to keep things watered. So you do want to, first of all, check your sprinklers. That's one of the things I think is adamant for everybody to do, especially if you didn't do it last month. Turn your sprinklers on manually and just stroll around your yard with some of those little hand flags, or get your kids to do it. Gosh, it's a fun thing to do with kids. You give them a handful of those little flags that you buy at the hardware store with on the little metal stems, and they have those, you know, 2-inch by 2-inch orange flags on the end. And just have the kids go around with you because it'll be hot. They can run through the sprinklers while they're doing it. It'll be great fun. And so if you see a sprinkler that is, you know, malfunctioning, clogged, stick one of those flags next to it, or if it's pointing in the wrong direction, the kids will enjoy running through it because it's pointing in the wrong direction, but you don't want to water your driveway, right, or your sidewalk.
Okay, so we're trying to conserve water right now.
Yeah.
Let's put what water we are using, let's put it on our plants.
And your neighbors will give you filthy looks if they see you watering your driveway or the sidewalk. So, so get out there with a handful of flags, take your kids, your grandkids out there, stake those sprinklers that are not functioning very well. Leave them there if you have a gardener and you don't want to deal with fixing it yourself. Let your gardener know that he needs to check those sprinklers out where you put the flags. Or if you're handy and you want to do it yourself, you know, do that. Take your bag of, you know, sprinkler heads and get out there and put new ones on the ones that aren't working right. And, you know, let the kids help you with that. It's kind of a fun project because you get to turn the sprinklers on and off and stay cool.
Yes, and if you're doing it yourself, my suggestion, unless you're really handy-dandy and you have a really good memory, is if you have some sprinkler that's part of the sprinkler that's not working well, take it with you to the hardware store.
Absolutely. Save yourself an extra trip.
All of a sudden, these things start looking alike.
They do. The other thing to note is that you want to use the same brand. You don't want to switch brands on the same stations because they may emit at different rates, and that can throw off the amount of water that you're particular area is getting. So, if you have a certain brand sprinkler nozzle, try and get that exact, same one to replace that area so that you don't end up having your water being applied at different rates in the same station.
Drowning some and not giving enough to others.
Exactly. So
August is hot, so we also want to make sure we're turning our sprinklers on early in the morning and we're cycling them. And Tina, could you tell us a little bit about what cycling means?
Yeah,
I think everybody probably knows, but
if you've listened, you hear us talk about this a lot. But just in case, if you're first tuning in, cycling just means having your sprinklers come on more than one time when you're watering. So if you were going to water, say you thought that a certain perennial bed needed 10 minutes of water that day, then you're going to have your sprinkler system give it 5 2-minute watering cycles or 3 3-minute watering cycles so that you end up with a total of 10 minutes. But it's going to happen once, and then all the other stations are going to run in their cycles, and then you're going to come back to that station and it's going to run again. And the reason that you do that is it pauses in between those cycles while other stations are running, and it allows the water that you put on to seep deeper into the soil. And then when it comes around the second or maybe even third time, you're able to have that water seep deep into the earth and not run off into the gutter. So that's the reason you want to do cycling.
We never want runoff.
No.
Never want runoff.
Bad.
I haven't seen runoff in so long. So if you have runoff, take care of it.
Yeah,
my goodness. And we also want to remind them to, if they didn't last month, make sure they're watering early, early, early.
Yes. And the reason for that, a couple reasons for that. One, you don't want to be watering when the sun is out because a lot of it will evaporate. Also, you can scorch the leaves of your plants if they have a lot of water drops on them. The sun can use that almost as a magnifying glass on some sensitive leaves. So ideally, you want to water before the sun comes up. And then when it comes up, it will dry before it's super hot. The early morning sun will dry off those leaves. And then when it gets super hot, you won't have the potential for scorching like you might if you water later in the day.
Just doing those two things just makes life easier. Less water you're using, healthier plants.
Absolutely. And the same thing with watering your pots. It's easier on you and on your potted plants if you get out there before it's hot. That gives your plants a chance to absorb the water so that it's in the stems and the leaves once the sun is at its hottest. So do water early in the morning, and that's also better for you because then you're not standing under the scorching sun trying to water your plants. So if you take care of the watering, you'll make it through August.
Make it through August, and you have time to do other things.
Yes, exactly.
August should be a play month.
It should.
A lot of fun things to do out there, and there's other times you could spend a lot of time in your garden.
Yes, and so speaking of playing in your garden, use this month to enjoy your garden. Use this month to have barbecues out there, play a little bocce ball or croquet on the lawn, have people over, sit under your patio covers, enjoy your barbecues, and don't do a whole lot of work in the garden. Just making sure that you're irrigating properly and that you're doing some maintenance. And let's talk about fire maintenance. Not anything we really want to think about.
Yeah, but that's where we live.
We got to be realistic.
That's where we live. Yeah, heads up.
So fire maintenance, a couple of things you want to do is you want to, any trees that you have around your property, you want to make sure that none of those branches are low. So prune your trees up so that you have no branches in the first 6 feet, because those can act as fire ladders, what the fire department calls, which means if the branches are low to the ground and you do happen to have a brush fire, that low-growing brush, if the branches are low, are going to ignite those low brush.
And we're not talking about our citrus trees or our miniature trees.
No.
We're talking about big trees.
Yeah, the big trees. If you've got oaks or sycamores, some of those big trees. So do prune those up so that the branches are 6 feet off of the ground.
We also don't want them touching the house.
Yes. So if there are any touching the house, or if you have a
tree
that's too close to the house, you might consider taking it out. I know I'm going to take out a couple.
I took out a whole row of eucalyptus.
Oh, eucalyptus especially. They're so full of oil.
We were sitting on our deck, I think it was in 2008 when the big fire, and we saw the firemen coming over the hill. And it was burning.
That'll make your stomach do flip.
And we were just sitting on our deck talking about evacuating if we had to evacuate. And we're looking at the trees coming up the hill, and we had this whole roll of eucalyptus, and we had some of the eucalyptus that were actually laying on top of our garage.
Ugh, not good.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, and what we did is we took out all the eucalyptus. I mean, we took out like 50 eucalyptus. It was, our house was just, they planted eucalyptus 18 inches apart 50, 60 years ago, and they all grew together. And so we took out this whole row of eucalyptus, and guess what we have now? Fruit trees. Size control fruit trees. And we have cherries and apples and oranges and mandarins and all kinds of stuff. And we get crops out of it now, and it opened my yard up. I have a better view, and that eucalyptus fire hazard is no longer there.
That is such a good lesson.
It was expensive. It took work.
Sure.
It took time. But it's our home, and we want to keep it.
Absolutely.
And now we have all these fruit trees, which is just so much fun.
That's such a good lesson, because I am going to take out a few trees that have grown up and they're too close to the house. And it's so much better if you're going to replace trees that you take out. Why not replace them with an edible tree? Not the tree itself, but it produces edible fruit. And use the water that you were watering ornamental trees to water a tree that's going to give you something to eat.
I agree. We have so much fun because we walk down our hill. And also, we put it close to our property line. And I looked up all the fruit trees that had the right amount of chill hours for where we live. And then I gave it to our neighbor. And I said, you pick. And I gave her all the ones that we were happy with, because she can pick it from her side of the property, and I can pick it from my side.
That's generous.
It was really fun, because now it's kind of like a community tree, and I got planted a little closer to the line because now she has it.
Right.
And we put up this white fence, and as she goes down, and she can pick fruit, and we can pick fruit, and everybody's happy.
That's a great idea.
And it's safer.
Yeah,
all those huge. You look a lot. Yeah,
what a great
it's
idea.
Cleaner, it's safer, it's prettier, and we just constantly have fruit as we walk up the hill and down the hill. And
that's fabulous.
I know I segued here, but fire. But that's one way to deal with fire not only water. It's like, what do you have close to your house?
Right. So remove those trees that are too close to your house. Consider, if you're going to replace them, planting them with fruit trees, which you will keep well irrigated so they won't become fire hazards. Because in order to have a fruit tree bear, you have to keep it well irrigated, and plants that are well irrigated are less prone to burning. But do remember, if you are going to plant fruit trees, deciduous fruit trees, you'll want to wait until December, January, and get bare root plants to plant, because they will be cheaper if you buy them bare root, and that's when we like to plant those dormant deciduous fruit trees, is in the wintertime. So take them out now in August, the trees you don't want, and then if you're going to replace them, think about, you'll have a few months to plan what you want to plant.
You have months to plan, you have months to get the area ready. It's kind of exciting thinking forward to stuff.
Well, that's the other thing we're going to talk about in this show, is planning. We're going to talk about just enjoying your garden for the most part in August, but when you are going to be indoors, when it's too hot outside, the other thing that you can do is start planning your cool season garden, which is so counterintuitive because
it's hot.
But that's really one of my favorite things to do in August, is to get ready for that cool season garden.
Exactly.
And so for our newer listeners or newer gardeners who aren't used to thinking...
August, what is she talking about?
In terms of a cool season garden, we'll briefly tell you what that means. In California, we are so blessed, as other Mediterranean climates are, in that we can garden year-round. We don't have snow. We don't have a time when our gardens go completely dormant. In fact, they don't go dormant, not ever, really.
Never.
And so what we really have here is we really have two seasons, not four, but two. We really have cool season and warm season in our gardens. And so in August, we're getting towards the end of the warm season garden, which ends towards the end of September. And what we should be doing is planning for our cool season garden, which starts the end of September and the beginning of October.
And Tina, why is it, we could plan it right now, we could think about it, but we could actually start doing things.
You can actually start doing it, not just planning. Planning is good, but there's actually something that you do in August for your cool season garden, and that is you plant seeds. So I know it's kind of crazy to think that you're going to be planting seeds for cool weather in August, but if you're like me and you like to grow things from seeds, then August is the time that you plant them because they need to be about 4 to 6 weeks old before you can put them in your garden outside. So if you plant them in August, say you plant them the second week of August, guess what? They're ready for you by the end of September to plant out in your garden.
And it's simple to do. It's easy to do. And you can either go on the internet, or they have wonderful seed catalogs out there. Oh,
yes.
My goodness.
Even though my husband just gives me no end of grief about the gajillion seed catalogs I get, I remind him that it's free entertainment. So if you aren't signed up for seed catalogs, oh, do it for sure. It's really fun, and it's inspiring. It's a good way to get ideas in your head about what you want to plant in your garden.
You know what I do, though, is sometimes I get so overwhelmed, I can't make a decision. So it's just plant something.
Yeah,
whatever
absolutely.
It is, just go get something and plant it. It doesn't have to be perfect.
Yeah.
You know, as long as it grows in our area, there's so much to look at. I'm like, oh my gosh, how do I decide?
But it's just true. It is true. And as you garden,
daunting.
Yeah, it's daunting. But as you garden over the years, you know, Katrina and I have our favorites of tomatoes or lettuces or whatever. Vegetable it is. You develop your favorites over time and you repeat those year after year, but then you always usually add something new in because it's just fun.
It's
to
fun.
Try something new. So let's talk about what you might want to plant now, what kind of seed you might want to start. First we'll talk about veggies. Katrina, what's your favorite cool season veggies? Do you have any favorites?
Oh, everything. I love the broccolis and I love the cauliflowers and I mean, just the snap peas and
snap peas.
Oh,
yeah.
I mean, it's just I love winter gardens.
Yeah, actually, for me, other than tomatoes, the winter gardens are my more favorite veggie gardens. Of course, tomatoes. You got to have tomatoes, and so
you have to have
a summer garden just to have tomatoes. But I actually get really excited this time of year because I love being able to go back to harvesting my own greens.
Oh, yes.
You know, and the greens just don't make it over the summer. Not where I live anyway. It's a little too hot. So the first thing I would suggest is just open up a seed catalog or get online and just look at all the amazing lettuces, arugula, spinaches, kales, although the kale sometimes lasts through the summer, but you can get started with a new crop of kale in the fall.
Or six kinds of kale.
Or six kinds of kale, exactly.
And you can't get those six kinds of the gardening stores.
No.
It's hard to find.
It's I do plant from six packs because, you get busy and sometimes you don't get around to starting the seeds. But if you start from seeds, you have so many more varieties. And so you can get these gorgeous lettuces that are this dark, deep, dark red or purple or even freckled. You can get, two-toned lettuces. And butter lettuce, I love butter lettuce. And usually when you go to the nursery, there's one type of butter lettuce. If you do it from seed, that you'll go to the seed catalog and there's half a dozen different kinds of butter lettuces that you can, you can try. So
and they're cheap.
For a
couple bucks, you could just have a party, right? And what happens if you just happen to order a little too much? It's okay. It's not that expensive.
Well, I'll tell you what I do, and this might be a fun thing for folks to do, is I have a little garden club in my neighborhood, and we do a lettuce seed planting activity. And so, where you buy package of butter lettuce, butter crunch lettuce seeds, and you're never going to be able to use them all in your own private garden, right? And so, you know, we have a dozen of us out on my patio, and we get one packet of all these different kinds of seeds, and then we share it, you know? And so I get 1 6-pack of butter crunch and 1 6-pack of red sails, and, you know, but then I don't feel like I've wasted the seed packets because I have all these other friends who are planting their own that they
take
home.
How nice is that?
Yeah, so it's kind of a fun idea if you want to have a little get-together with your other friends who like to garden.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, and then you have these 6-packs, which will be ready for you to transplant out into your garden come the end of September if you plant them in August. And let's talk a little bit about how you go about, you know, starting these seeds. So what do you do? Well, first you need to have a container to plant the seeds in. And I just save the 6-pack, you know, plastic things that I've gotten plants in from the nursery, and I just wash them out. And you just wash them in a solution of 10 parts water to 1 part bleach. And that way they're sterilized from any fungal diseases that might have, you know, lived in that soil or developed in the soil from the previous plants. And then you just let them air dry. And then I like to use a seed starting mix, which you can actually just buy in a bag at a nursery. And it's labeled seed starting mix. And the reason that's different from regular potting soil is it's a finer texture. So in regular potting soil, you probably see little bits and pieces of bark or, you know, other plant material. But in the seed starting mix, it's been sifted so that it's very fine. And the reason that's a good thing is these poor little seeds are going to push their first little leaves out of the soil. And if they run into, you know, a little pebble or a little piece of bark, they may get, you know, frustrated. And
they might not be strong
I'm
enough. I'm not strong enough to push this away.
Yeah. So I do like to use the seed starting mix when I'm starting. If you don't have it, though, you can totally use a regular potting mix, but I would use a fresh bag because if you're using an old bag that's maybe been, you know, gotten moisture in it and maybe some fungal spores in it, you know, you don't know if that soil has been contaminated enough that it will transmit a disease to your new seedlings. So if you don't have access to seed starting mix, at least get a fresh bag of potting soil, I think.
Good idea.
Yeah. And then once you fill those little 6-packs with the potting mix or the seed starter mix, and believe me, you don't have to use the 6-packs. Another thing that I actually really like to use are, you know, the plastic containers that fruit comes in often now, like strawberries or apples even, you mm-hmm. know, or peaches, they'll come in one of those plastic containers that have, it's like a little lid
yes.
on it. I actually love to use those as well because they act like mini greenhouses.
Ah.
And so you fill those with the potting mix or the seed starting mix and put your seeds in there, and then you can put that lid on, you know, after you've watered it, and it acts like a little greenhouse and it keeps the moisture in. Because that's what I'm going to talk about next. The most important thing to getting seeds to germinate is consistent moisture. If you ever let a seed dry out, as you know, Katrina.
Oh, absolutely.
The game's over. Those poor little seedlings have to have consistent moisture or they will not germinate. And so what you have
And you
to
cannot
do,
make up for it.
No, you can't.
You can't.
Oh, it dried out, but I'll give it more water now. They're pre-programmed somehow in nature. It's like they have a little brain that tells them, oh, it's a drought. We're not going to germinate. Too bad, so sad.
Like anything, if it dies, it's hard to bring it back to life.
Yeah. So when you fill your containers, whatever they are, with this potting mix or this seed starter mix, then you look at your seed packet, and it will tell you how deep that seed should be planted. And what I do is I don't poke holes because it's super easy to poke a hole that's too deep. Instead, what I do is I don't fill the soil up to the very top of the container. I leave it about 1/4 inch below. And you want to firm the soil that you've put in. You don't want it too loose because then as you water it, it'll sink, you know, down to half its level. So just tamp it gently in the container. until you have soil in about a quarter of an inch below the top of the container. And then lay your seeds on the top of the soil, just right on the top of the soil. And I always put about three seeds, if they're big enough seeds, like lettuce seeds, you can actually, you know, see three seeds. They're big enough. If you were planting a seed that was more fine and you couldn't see, just sprinkle a couple of them on there. And then after you've read the packet, it will tell you, cover with an eighth of an inch, a quarter inch, will tell you how deep that seed should be. Some seeds need light to germinate, and it will say barely cover or don't cover at all. But once you've covered it with the appropriate amount of soil, then you can gently water it either with a misting spray, like a spray bottle, or some hose nozzles will have a mist setting.
You have to be real careful, though. If it's a hose, when she says mist, you really need mist because you will blow it out.
You will blow your seeds right over the edge of your container, and then you have to start over.
How do we know that?
Maybe one of us has done that a time or two. The other way that you can water is you can fill a tray up with water, about an inch of water, and you can set your six packs into that water, and they will, what's called bottom water, they will actually absorb the water through the holes in the bottom of the container, and they will water themselves that way.
It kind of sucks it up.
It does.
But it takes a little bit more time, so either way works.
Either way,
if you can't be gentle,
yes, then bottom water.
Then bottom water.
And we're not just talking about vegetable seeds. This is good for any kind of a seed, flower seeds, veggie seeds. The process is exactly the same. So that's how you would plant your seeds. And then I start my seeds indoors. And the reason I do that is both when it's cool in the wintertime or in August when it's hot, is because if it's outside in August when it's hot, they can easily dry out so much, so quickly. And the other reason is that seeds are programmed to germinate between a certain temperature range. So if you are planting lettuce seeds, they're really not going to want to germinate if it's 90 degrees.
Yeah.
And so by bringing them inside where it's in the 70s, they'll say, oh yeah, I can germinate in here. It's 70 degrees, you know, 75 degrees or whatever.
And, you know, and if you plant outside, it's so easy for that soil. If you're only covering it up by an eighth of an inch or a quarter of an inch, I'm not home often enough to be able to make sure that doesn't dry out between morning and evening.
Or do you, even if you are home, do you want to be going out every 2 hours and spritzing it?
No.
No.
No. I like gardening, but not
that much.
No.
There are other things.
There's a lot of other things to do.
In life, yeah. So anyway, I start them indoors. They will, you know, most seeds will generally germinate within 3 to 7 days. But again, look at the seed packet. The seed packet is your friend. It will tell you not only how deep to plant that seed, but how many days until it germinates. And the reason that that's important is once it does germinate, you need to be sure that it's getting light. Because once it's out, that little seed is out of the soil, if you don't provide enough light, it's going to get tall and leggy and it's going to flop over because it is searching for light. So keep an eye on it. It's just the most wonderful experience to see these little leaves pop out of the soil.
So cool. So Tina, what you're saying is that when you plant it, it doesn't necessarily have to be in light immediately. But as soon as it peeks its little head through the soil, you need to start giving it some sun.
You do. And you want to put it in a bright window. If you're going to continue to keep it indoors, or if you're ready to put it outdoors, what I like to do after they germinate, and they've been inside for a couple of days after they've germinated, and they usually get to be about an inch tall, then I do like to move them outside to my patio, my covered patio, because then I know that they're going to be getting indirect light, and so they will be happy to have some indirect light. But because they're undercover, they're not going to be drying out, you know, instantaneously.
You still need to pay attention to them.
Yes, you definitely need to pay attention to them. You definitely need to make sure that they are getting misted or bottom watered, you know, every day, especially if the weather is, you know, hot. But if you put them in a sheltered location, if it's super hot, you know, don't put them outside you know, keep them in a lighted window if you know the weather's going to be in the 90s and you're afraid they're going to just shrivel up. But, yeah, then let them, you know, grow in a nice sheltered place for 4 to 6 weeks, and then you'll have these plants that are ready to put out in your garden at the end of September.
And if you're going away for a few days, you need to have somebody keep an eye on, because if you go away for a few days, you've done all this work.
For nothing.
And they're gone.
And absolutely get someone either to come to your house, or if you have a gardening friend, they'll babysit a flat. You can carry the whole flat of plants over. I've done this before with master gardener friends. And I say, you know, hey, I'm going on vacation for a week. Can I bring a flat of my seedlings over to your house? Katrina would take a flat of my seedlings in a heartbeat, wouldn't you?
I would take two.
And vice versa.
Of course. Hey, Tina, I need to make a quick announcement here because we are on the radio and we do have our rules. So I need to let everybody know that they're listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, and that the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about the show, go to kuci.org. You know, Tina, I'd watch your plants anytime.
I know. You would.
And you know, and there's so many people out there, too, because if you tell them what you're doing, I've had house sitters or people coming to stay while I'm gone, and a lot of times people love being able to be part of. They don't want to be responsible for the whole big garden, but if you give them a little chunk of the garden, they can take care of a flat or a six-pack. And people, they're like, how are my babies doing? You know, and they can come visit.
That's such a good point. I never thought of that. But you're actually giving people ownership and you know, a job to do that they can be proud of. And
then it's not a lifetime responsibility.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, I thought about that a couple weeks ago because I was watching my friend's chickens. And
oh,
I went, this is like perfect. I got to go play with the chickens. I got to get the eggs. I had this great experience. And then she came home and I had no more responsibility. And I filled up with all I needed.
You know, it's like being a grandparent.
Yes.
You get to play with the kids and then send them home, right?
Yes. So
so people can play with your seedlings and then send them home. And then you can reward them when they have produced, you know, mature food.
This is your plant. Yeah. And give them something from your plant.
Here's your lettuce.
Here's your lettuce.
Here's the salad tonight.
Here's your kale.
That's a great idea. I didn't even think of it. It's not rewarding it might be for somebody.
Yeah, and it won't be for everybody, but some people will go, like, I could do this for a week or two or over a weekend and babysit the plant.
Yeah.
And then they're done with it, and then they get rewards down the line.
Yeah, that's
win-win.
A good idea. It's a good idea. I'm gonna ponder who would be good candidates for that, in addition to you, of course.
Indeed.
Yes. Well, let's finish the seed discussion by letting folks know what they should plant for the cool season, the actual, for you know,
wonderful plants for the cool season.
Varieties for the cool season. So for your veggie garden, anything from the lettuce family. So any kinds of lettuces and greens are great. And then also anything from the brassica family, and that means the broccoli family. So any cabbages, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, those are all great candidates.
And you know
what?
We keep saying this, but oh my gosh, you will find so many different kinds of broccoli and cauliflower.
Oh, the different colors.
All the different colors.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, and it's so nice. And I tend to get, if I'm going to do it, I'll get something you don't see in the nursery or you don't see in the grocery store because it's a little different.
My sister did purple cauliflower last year. We had the best time, you know. She brought these huge heads of purple cauliflower, and we would, you know, cut them up into chunks, and each of us would take, you know, a piece of it home with us when we would get together for dinner. So, and it was just fun, you know, to have purple cauliflower.
Different things are a lot of fun. It gives more wonderment in the garden.
Yeah, actually, it was great fun. And then some things that you can plant for your cool season gardens, but don't start them in advance. I just want to make this distinction for folks. There are some things that should be planted directly in the ground, not grown in six packs.
Good point.
And those for the fall or cool season garden would be the snap peas. You can plant them in six plants and transplant them. That is a possibility. I seem to have better luck when I direct sow them. So do it either way with your peas, but for sure on your carrots and beets, I think those definitely need to be direct sown because they are root vegetables. And although you will see beet plants in six packs in the nursery, what happens is usually the seeds are sown so thickly in there that you'll have 10 beet plants in one cell of the six pack. And as you can imagine, you can never get a beet to its mature size.
Yeah, they get clumpy.
They get so clumpy. So you either are going to have to pull out a whole bunch of those and just use, you know, the one or two seedlings left in each cell so that they have room to grow to their mature size. Or personally, I just direct sow the seeds right where I want them to grow for all of the root veggies.
And it's easy.
It's easy. Super easy.
And so, if you don't go get a catalog, you can go to any nursery and they will have these things.
Yes. Yeah. But the thing about sowing carrots, oh, it's so fun. You can get purple carrots. You get the orange carrots. You get the yellow carrots. You get the reddish carrots. And then particularly if you have, you know, little people who come visit you or you have kids yourself, they love nothing more than to pull buried treasure.
Oh, my gosh. The look on their face when they pull this little thing and up comes a carrot. And some of them don't know that carrots come from the ground.
Exactly.
And there's just like a treasure hidden under there. And you just got to make sure they don't pull them all up at one time.
At one time, yeah. And so what I like to do is plant different colors and tell them, okay, you go find two orange ones and two purple ones and two yellow ones. And then it's like an Easter egg hunt, you know, as they're plowing through the foliage trying to find
which ones
to get. And then they each get to come in with six carrots and you haven't lost your whole carrot garden, right? So anyway, but don't start the carrots in the six packs. Wait until, you know, you can sow those directly in the garden.
Ground cools down, the air temperature cools down.
Yeah. So anyway, let's talk about the flowers, though, that you can sow in the fall.
Tina's lighting up.
Katrina knows I love my flowers.
Tina has the most beautiful garden, and she has flowers blooming all year long.
Oh,
it's just beautiful.
Flowers. And the reason you want to grow flowers, cool season flowers or warm season flowers from seed, is you can get tall varieties. In the nursery, in the six packs, almost always the growers are opting for shorter varieties of snapdragons and stock and other plants because they bloom when they're short, and that looks good in a six pack in the nursery. It makes you want to buy them. But if you've ever planted tall varieties of snapdragon that are 3-4 feet tall, there is nothing that is a more stunning sight in your garden than these tall varieties of flowers. So,
tell us some of your favorites.
Do plant rocket snapdragons. They grow tall, and they also happen to be fairly rust resistant, not rust proof, but they seem to get rust later than a lot of snapdragons. So I do like rocket. The other thing that I like about planting them from seed is that you can plant single colors. In the nursery, when you buy six packs, they're often mixed.
Almost all the time.
Almost all the time. And while that can be lovely, I love having big swaths of single colors because I think it's much more impressive in a border in your garden to have this big swath of yellow snapdragons or this big swath of pink. Or, you know, a swath of yellow here, and then later on a swath of pink, and then another swath of yellow. It just is, I think, more impressive, and it gives you better design options. Because just think, if you planted these bright yellow snapdragons, and in front of them you planted bright orange calendula, which is, you know, only grows to maybe 14 inches tall, but behind it you had these 24 to 36 inch tall snapdragons. Oh. Just think of that yellow with that orange. Just beautiful. Or the stock. The other one I love to plant in the cool season is stock from seed. And, you know, you can have this beautiful lavender stock, you know, mixed with a bright pink or yellow. I mean, lavender and yellow looks so great together. And you can, you know, then choose your single colors, and then also your heights. Perhaps you want to have the tall snapdragons, and in front of them, you want to have these medium height lavender stocks. I mean, how beautiful.
That's gorgeous. Yeah. Do you have a particular stock you like?
I would look for, there's a lot of different ones, but I would look for the ones that have a high scent. That's why seed catalogs are great, is you can, you know, review the varieties in the seed catalog, and they'll call out how tall they get, you know, what whether they're highly scented or not as highly scented, and that helps you make your decision based on, you know, what, like underneath, I love every autumn to plant the tall, highly scented stock under my bedroom window. Because we love to have our windows open at night, and then that you just have that scent wafting in to your bedroom, and it's heavenly, just absolutely heavenly.
Sounds wonderful.
Yeah. So anyway, let's talk about some other seeds of flowers. I think I mentioned calendula, also pansies. That's the other cool thing about growing pansies from seed. They're a little bit trickier to start from seed, but if you get the pelletized seed, that helps you have success. It just means they coat the seed with a material so that the seed is bigger. It looks like a pellet, and that's a little easier for you to start. But the reason I even like to do pansies from seed is oftentimes, same thing with pansies, you get those mixed six packs, and maybe you just really want, you know, you're just dying to have those orange pansies, and you want to make sure that you're just getting, you know,
orange pansies.
So
you have a color it wants to be with, and you don't want to have...
Right.
Yeah.
And the violas, those are easy to start from seed, and those are a lovely edging. The bellis, the English daisies, those are fun to start from seed. They're a nice edging, and lovely shades of pink. I don't know if you've ever grown the English daisies, but that's one of my really fun things to plant in the fall for the winter. There's just so many of these, you know, delphiniums. You can start from seed. And one of the reasons it's fun to do the delphiniums from seed also is you can choose the really tall ones, because often the ones you can get at the nurseries are kind of the mid-height, low to mid-height. But you can get delphiniums that will grow 5 feet tall. But often, you know, when they bloom, the stalk can be up to 5 feet tall.
Can you imagine what you'd have to pay for getting that, if you planted a whole package of tall delphiniums?
Well, I don't know if you've ever bought plants from Annie's Annuals. Annie's Annuals is a grower up in the Bay Area that does unusual stuff.
I've bought many things from Annie's Annuals.
Not just annuals, as you know, a lot of perennials too. And you can buy the delphiniums, you know, the really tall ones from them, but they only sell 4-inch plants, you know, and at $5 a pop, you know, to get a lot of tall delphiniums would be rather expensive.
Yes,
so,
I know.
So you can try to do them from seed yourself, and then it will be a lot cheaper.
And you end up with this more exotic looking yard. You know, like, it's not common. It's special. And that's one thing about your yard, Tina. You walk through it, and it doesn't look like, it's like, where did she get this plant? I've never seen this one before. And wow, look at that. That's spectacular. And that big swath of color next to another big swath of color, and how you layer it with the heights, and being able to get these tall plants, the layering, the texture is just phenomenal. It's eye candy.
You know, it is funny because being on a couple of garden tours over the years, people's gardens, everyone is beautiful in its own right. But that is the comment that I get from the people who are on the garden tours, is that, you know, oh my gosh, what did you, they ask me, what did you feed those snapdragons? I have never seen snapdragons that tall. And I say, I wish I could take credit for some secret food, but it's the variety that I chose. I chose tall snapdragons. That's why they're so spectacular. And they're just hard to find unless you grow them from seed yourself.
And when she says hard to find, it's almost impossible. I have tried.
Yeah. Occasionally you can find rocket. So if you want to remember a tall variety of snapdragons, just remember the word rocket. But usually you'll find the rocket snapdragons in a mixture. So you won't be able to get just yellow or just pink. You'll have to get a mixture. But at least you'll have tall snapdragons.
Indeed. Indeed, better than nothing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So the seed is the way to go, and it's time, it's plant, you know, it's crazy, it's August and it's hot. And it's, but now if you want to do the seed thing, it's such a good time to do it. And, you know, like right now we're, I don't know about you, Tina, I'm just kind of cleaning up my outside mess when things are dying. And I'm just cutting back the dead branches and the dead leaves. And I'm kind of leaving everything alone because I've already mulched and the watering system is going okay. And it's.
But, you know, Katrina, you're doing the right thing because by keeping all of that stuff trimmed, it at least looks tidy.
It does look tidy.
And by keeping it appropriately watered, at least things aren't dying and leaving you big holes. But also, as you're doing that and cleaning, I know you, you're planning for what you're going to change, you know, when the weather changes.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's the other thing that's great. It's great to, you know, grow things from seed, you know, in August. But if you're not that kind of person and you don't want to hassle with doing the seed thing, it's a great time just to plan.
And to sit and look. Mm-hmm. Like, I had this here last year. Does it really work for me? Just because I've had it for many years, does it really work in my garden?
Right.
Now, what different could I, what could I do? How can I change? Maybe a little more drought tolerant. Maybe something else would work better there. And and then go enjoy, have a glass of something cold to drink and look at your garden and supervise it.
Exactly. And you know me and roses. So I do have to put one plug in for what to do with roses this month because I love having roses at Thanksgiving. You know, you have guests over. Isn't it cool to have roses blooming at Thanksgiving? So in August, our roses are usually looking pretty straggly, at least mine are. They've been visited by some fungal diseases, by some insects. And so what I do is I go out and I give the roses a big cleanup. I rake up all of the nasty leaves that have fallen off that have rust on them or black spot or whatever. And I don't actually prune the roses like I prune them in January, but I give them a pretty good, you know, haircut. Cut them off, make sure that they're deadheaded. If there's a few crossing branches that I can easily take out, if there's a branch or two of dead wood that I can easily take out with my loppers. In August, I try to give the roses, you know, on a cool day or early in the morning, I just try to give them a bit more of a cleanup, you know, than I have in a few months. And then I give them a little bit of fertilizer and I make sure that the watering system that they're having is working and that they're getting adequate irrigation. And you know what? I get great roses in the fall.
You get great roses all the
time. I love my roses. But if you do give them a little attention in August, man, they'll just come back and give you blossoms for bouquets, you know, for Halloween and Thanksgiving.
And, you know, it's amazing if you just take a little bit of care. This is what I've learned because I've never been a rose person. And I looked at it, I'm like, you give to me, I'll give back. But that doesn't work. And I look at these roses that we've had, like they never really did anything. But once I start taking a bit of care of these roses, I mean, they're pretty hardy. But if you give them a little bit of love and care and you do things to them, they're beautiful. They give you so much bounty. It's like they give you so much more than you ever give them.
They do. And as you and I discovered last year when we really cut back water a lot, we were so conscious because of the water, you know, rationing and the, mm-hmm. and the water pricing that occurred last year during this drought. But we did not take our roses out because what you and I both learned is that they are relatively drought tolerant. You don't have to water them as much as we used to think you did.
It's amazing.
You have to water them deeply, though. So you don't have to water them every other day like we used to think you have to. But you have to water them deeply at least once a week. And they may not bloom as much as they did in the past when you were giving them more water. But one thing I personally don't recommend when people are thinking they have to rip out a bunch of their garden because they need to go drought tolerant, don't automatically think you have to rip out your roses. Your roses just need to be watered deeply, but they can go with less frequent water. And what that can mean sometimes is that instead of having water-hungry plants around them, you can switch out those water-hungry plants to lavenders, to grasses, and have still these beautiful roses that are surrounded by more Mediterranean-looking plants that will allow you to have your roses and some beautiful blooming lavenders, which are more drought tolerant, some beautiful salvias, which are more drought tolerant, and maybe even a few grasses, which are more drought tolerant. but don't think you have to totally get rid of your roses.
That's true. Yeah. I've kept roses and some other plants I really thought they were going to be gone, and I majorly cut back on my water, and some things, some things didn't do so well. But there's some things that really did well that I didn't think that would do well.
I tried a few more sedums, for ground cover in between the stepping stones, and they are doing fantastic. So there are plants that still look like that cottagey garden look. The sedums, the grasses, the salvias, the lavenders, those all can still give you that kind of cottagey garden look that we all love, but they use less water, and you can keep your roses as part of that plant palette and have a really pretty colorful garden. I love the succulents, particularly in containers these days, but if you don't want to have a completely, what you may think of as a drier looking garden, you can choose plants that are less water hungry and still have that cottage look. So do some planning right now.
And enjoy your yard.
Enjoy your yard.
You have some time off because pretty soon you're going to get really busy.
Yeah, and as part of the planning, if you are going to make a switch to some more drought-tolerant plants that include our natives and what we call California-friendly plants that come from other dry areas of the world, this is a great time to start thinking about doing that. We're not going to want to actually plant any of those until October, November, but you want to have a plan. Especially if you're going to take out a lawn and have a large area, you want to do a plan. And that plan can include these natives and California-friendly plants that are actually very beautiful in terms of their foliage and in terms of their blooming capability. There's a ton of natives,
and there's a lot of websites out there. This is time where you can start looking at things and just start dreaming, because it takes, if you're going to do a lot, it's going to take a lot to plan it. And that's something you don't do overnight. So now you're not working a lot hard in the yard this time. If you're thinking about changing things out, go look on the internet. You mentioned, what was it, Pinterest.
Yeah, as you're surfing the net, and you want to make note of places where you saw things, plants that you liked, or layouts, landscape designs that you liked. If you haven't done Pinterest, it's a great place to click, and then you save these pictures of things that you found on the web, and then you can go back later as your ideas are coming together and remember what all you have seen.
Just because it's drought tolerant doesn't mean it's not beautiful.
No,
there's some stuff out there that's pretty like haggard looking, but you don't have to pick those.
No.
And some of the ones that are out there, they just need a little bit of water, and then they actually do look really pretty.
Oh, they do.
And
they can be stunningly beautiful. And habitat. Oh, you'll see so many more birds and lizards and butterflies. They make such a great habitat. I think we're about out of time, but there was one thing that you had mentioned to me, Katrina, before we started, and that was that the Master Food Preservers were doing a lot of stuff in August, and because we all have, if we have veggie gardens, perhaps have more produce than we know what to do with. Can you tell us how people can learn about how to preserve their harvest?
Oh, my gosh. Right now, we're getting so much stuff out of our yard, and the Master Food Preservers is like the sister of Master Gardeners. So we're both UC-based, and we're both housed in the same location. And they will teach you how to preserve your harvest. Now, if you want to learn how to dehydrate, if you want to learn how to can, there's just a lot. Pickle, ferment, whatever you want to do. They're at the Orange County Fair right now. And so if you want to go down there, they're having classes. You could look at our website. You just Google Master Food Preservers of Orange County, California, so you get the right state. And you will find out all the classes they have down there. There's a class that they're having. I believe you could look it up. It's the middle of the month, and it's coming up in a couple weeks. It does fill up rather quickly,
And
you can look at our website and check that out. And there's just a lot of different things that you could be doing as far as food preserving. Also, our next two shows, we're going to be talking about food preserving. We have a really great guy named Ernest Miller, and he is like the master of food preserving. So if food preserving at all interests you, listen to the next couple of weeks because we're going to have him on. And he's going to be talking everything from canning tomatoes to making jams to dehydrating your food to fermentation to pickling. And we're just going to cover the whole gambit with things that we're doing there.
That is so awesome.
But check out our website. Check out the website. It's wonderful, and you can get ideas there. And if you can't make classes now, we have classes throughout the whole year. And it's www.ucanr.org/MFPOC. And check it out. And if you can't remember it and you're driving, just Google Master Food Preservers of Orange County. And there's a lot of stuff on there you could learn.
And the classes are great. I've been to two of their classes. I grew up making jam and pickles, but I went to their classes anyway. And those people are so well organized and such great teachers. And it's hands-on, so you actually get to practice.
You do it. You make it, and you take it home. Yeah. So they want you to have a practical knowledge when you get home to do this.
It's very, very wonderful. You get great stuff to take home and delicious stuff to share with your family.
So go check them out. And they also have a hotline. So if you have questions about what you're doing, you could just go to the website. The hotline's on there, and just say, I want to do this. How do I do it? Or I'm doing this. Am I doing it correct? And if you have any questions, they're glad to help you out with that.
And the best thing is you'll have confidence that what you're doing is safe, and you can confidently feed it to your family and friends.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Well, Tina, I think we've come to the end of our show again.
Yes. Everybody stay cool.
Stay cool. Stay hydrated. Have a great time in your yard. And have a wonderful week.